Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brett Chester.
This guy.
Today, we're covering Deathcore of Krieg because why not, basically? Because they're cool. Brad disagrees. I think they're cool. We're mostly talking about their origin story, some of their style, and obviously a certain unit that they're really well known for that one of us is less a fan of than the other.
Settle down. We're going to have to talk about horses at some point.
All right. 40K.
Who's going to be negative then, John? Who will be negative then?
Yeah, I'm going to be super positive. There's going to be a downturn on this cast at some point. 40K Lorecast, the weekly show focusing on the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Please continue to follow and comment as it really aids the algorithm and helps push us out to new listeners. So big thank you for everyone who does. Awesome. If you want, there's links to in the show notes. Please check out our YouTube channel for our bi-monthly Q&As and some of the new stuff coming out from Brad. If you also like the show, check out our other show, History of 40K, where we talk about the history of the Warhammer 40K tabletop game. And if you love the sound of my voice, check out my other show, Retro Recall, where I talk about video games from the 80s and 90s. Some of those graphics, by the way, are rough. Wow. Like early PC CD games, their attempt at 3D.
Real, lot of boxy things. A lot of boxy things.
Oh, and I'm going to say right
hard
now.
Hard angles.
The game Myst sucks. Still sucks. Hate that game. All right.
How much of a puzzle solver? Got it.
I hate Myst. Anyway. If you would like us, though, and you want to support us, there's two great ways to do it. One is we do have merchandise. Link in the notes. You can buy our shirts, buy our sweatshirts, buy our objective markers, even our dice. Great way to help us out. Or our Patreon. Great link in the notes. Patreon's a great way to support us, help us expand out, get more things. Those of you who contribute, it's great. It really does help move us along. Patreon's simple. It's $4.99 a month. You get this show and History of the 40K ad-free. Or for $4.99 US, you still get it. Because last week, we did my hometown. And fun thing about this, Brad doesn't see this part of the show notes. And this week, we're doing Toledo. And Brad is very aware of what I'm about to do.
The Mudhens, Tony Pacos, come on,
anyway,
man.
Toledo was founded in 1833 and called Frogtown because it was a marsh and full of frogs, known as the Great Black Swamp. Wow.
I have won.
What an incredible origin story.
Multiple times.
Good job. And 2 years after it was founded, Ohio and Michigan went to war over it in the greatest who gives a shit battle of maybe all time.
Ohio was victorious.
Yeah, and they kept Toledo. Congratulations, Ohio. Great job what you did with the place. We're really impressed with what you did with it. And then Michigan kept what was called the Upper Peninsula, which sits where?
Basically,
the bottom, the bottom of Michigan. Good job, guys. What? Oh, Jeep's built in Toledo. They make glass there. That's why it's called a glass city.
We used to make a bunch of glass.
Yeah. You have frogs. There's a zoo.
Toledo Zoo is legit. Thank you very much.
You've had a few riots.
As does everybody of note.
Running out of stuff pretty quick. Pretty quick.
Still, Jamie Farr. We've had the Mudhens.
Nope. No one's heard of that. It's a minor league baseball team. No one's proud of them. Wait, you know the cool thing about real cities? They have major league sports. What? Major league.
The Toledo Rockets? Fantastic.
Is that a, what's that?
It's a college rocket team.
Roller derby?
University of Toledo Rockets. Won the MAC multiple times. Mid-America Conference. Mac?
Did you? What did you win it in? Dressage?
Oh, you know what? I will not be shamed by the proud heritage of Toledo. The power, the glory.
Here's what I know. A few years ago, we were on Brad was live casting and a tornado hit outside of his house. And that happened. And the only reason I know that happened, it wasn't on the news. It wasn't on the news anywhere. I don't know because it happened to Brad. A tornado hit Toledo. And I'm in Michigan.
In the live cast, by the way.
And I'm in Michigan. And even we were like, man, no one will care. So anyway.
Hurtful to Toledo. Hurtful.
Lastly, we have a Discord. Again, if you don't like what I'm saying, Discord's there. Or if you want to join our Discord and help me make fun of Toledo, which is a very good time, we could actually make that a channel. We have a wonderful channel in Discord that may be gone by the time this comes out of John mispronouncing things. Magnificent, by the way. A plus on the part of the moderators to put that there. I was massive fan of it. But maybe make a new one. All the things that are wrong with Toledo. But great place to come in there. It's mostly about 40K except for this stuff. Great place to interact with Brad, myself, but more importantly, interact with people who are similar to yourself, who like Warhammer a lot, like 40K, and really want to kind of just learn more about it, be it playing a tabletop, memeing, just kind of whatever. But yeah, jump in. Super fun time. But with that, the Krieg. I'm just going to call them the Krieg because I can't pronounce core consistently. So we're just going to go with the Krieg.
You were tired of me correcting you on that one. You're like, yeah, it's, I'll call it.
I want to call it Corpse, Death Corpse of Krieg. And we're like, it's Core of Krieg. And I just don't feel like getting yelled at. So we're calling him the Krieg. Ta-da. Now, a lot of you who don't play Guard or don't play Krieg, more specifically, don't get why these guys are so popular. Because Krieg players are like Orc players. They love playing Krieg. They get a huge kick out of watching all of their Krieg die. And they especially love killing your big stuff with their Krieg shovels.
Well, one of my favorites is looking over the history and about, and the phrase that kept coming over and over again is their disturbing disregard for their own lives.
Yes.
Over and over. If you look at every type of history summary on it, it's just Krieg trying to basically shovel to death Lords of Change and not even thinking about running away.
Yeah, Krieg are absolutely hilarious. I actually own a ton of Krieg, and so deal with it. I'm one of said fanboys. And the only problem with Krieg, for me, is the horse thing, which we're going to deal with later, which I own none of. The only horse I own I own one Lord Solar, which I'm in the process of converting right now to something that doesn't have a horse on it. Same base. He's not going to be on a horse. It's objectively stupid. The one horse he's on right now does have jets on it because it's an Artel model, but it's stupid. Just is. So we're going to do a deep dive into Krieg. I hope you guys enjoy the joy that is Krieg, because like orcs, they're this weird, super grim, dark thing that's also becomes funny. It's just weird. So let's get into it and start off with,
you know. So crazy.
Oh, they're out of their minds. I mean, you can actually go on Reddit and people have like Krieg jokes, and one of them is like, what's one Kriegsman turns to the other one and says, hey, do you know what sound it makes when you hit a swarm lord with a shovel? The other one says, no, I don't. And the Kriegsman runs off to go hit a swarm lord with a shovel. That's just what the Krieg do. Yeah. Sorry. Let's get the Krieg. Krieg was a world like any other in the Imperium. It was just a mediocre planet existing to provide for the Imperium. It was a hive world, and actually a big one.
Huge.
Yeah, it was in Segmentum Tempestus, which is the undercarriage of the galaxy. I'm just going to start messing with directions, guys, at this point. Now we're going undercarriage. That's where it is. Because, look, the Astronomicon doesn't work. Like, we've had numerous people pop in the Discord to tell me, like, yeah, I actually study celestial navigation. This would never work. You can't triangulate off of one point. So deal with it. Undercarriage. Billions of Imperial citizens are on this planet just laboring away from the Imperium. And what they made is completely unknown because all of Krieg's history has been subject to Imperial purge of all records.
Well, that's what happens when you become disloyal to the God Emperor, though.
What happens is that we don't know all of it. We just know that Krieg was decently prosperous. And it was enough to support numerous hives. And this is how the planet got into the many billions. And whatever it was producing did have high value to the Imperium, as well as the Mechanicum, it looks like. And as Krieg grew, so did its wealth. And for those of you who
say, as usual, it wasn't for it's not like everybody got wealthy. The nobility got wealthy. Well, and because the nobility got wealthy, they decided that maybe they were a little too big for their britches, and they started fortifying this world. Like even
before that, I mean, those of who know Latin, radux malum est cupidus is the one I'd go with, or, you know, virtuous post numos. These are, figure it out. If you guys know what that means, that's on you. But yeah, so this, so Brad's right.
I was going to go with more Snoop Dogg on faux shizzle my nizzle, to each his own.
What? Virtuous post numos. It's easy. Oh, come on. That's original Horace. Anyway. All right. Don't stop bringing this cast down, Brad. All right. So what happens is, over time, the nobility begins to look at the Imperium as a parasite on their own empire. They're, instead of focusing on the incredible wealth that they're actually generating for themselves, they focus on the wealth that's going back to the Imperium. And they begin to fortify their own planet. First, the hives, and then around the hives.
I was going to say, then they did around the hives, and then they went, hey, let's set up orbital defense platforms, and a lot of them.
And so they built this giant thing all around the planet. While this is going on, the citizenry of Krieg are completely oblivious to all of it. They just assumed everything they were doing was at the beset of the Imperium, because why wouldn't it be? Building defenses and raising troops are things the Imperium wants and needs.
And they've also been doing it for thousands of years, so yes.
Yeah. So 433 of M40, things take a bit of a turn. The high autocrat.
A bit of a turn?
That's a little bit of a turn.
I guess you're not wrong, John.
Yeah. A slight deviation occurs, you know, where the high autocrat, who's the leader of the largest hive, so he then becomes the King Ding-a-ling. I don't know how you might go it. And he has the full support of all the other hive leaders, declares Krieg is an independent kingdom from the Imperium, immediately declares martial law on the planet, and sends out their very substantial military force to secure the planet's hives and people to their cause. The funny thing about this is a massive planet, and the planetary defense force is controlled by all the rebels, and so effectively, every hive falls.
Whoa.
All at once.
Except for one. Yeah. Who basically went out and went, ain't going out like that. And decided they had a real problem with traitors.
No, the hive did fall. That's the thing. No, that hive also did fall to the traitors.
Yes, but no.
It did. The hive fell to the traitors. The problem was, outside that hive was Colonel Yurton. Yeah. Who was on patrol with his regiment that had just been formed. And he went, nope. Yeah. And took that regiment and drove it into the Hive Ferrograd and went, mine. And kept it. Then puts out a call to everyone on the planet saying, oh, yeah, we kept this one. So if anyone wants to be a loyalist, come hang out with the loyalists. Still, situation's kind of jacked, though, because Yurton and his regiment are holding one hive, and the rebels hold every other hive, the entire planetary defense network, and most of the food. And my favorite part, though, is Yurton calls the Imperium and is like, hey, bad news. The planet fell, but we've got a foothold. Can you guys come help us out? And the Imperium checked it, looked at it, and went, yeah, that's just going to be a pain in the ass.
They sent a response. They told him to take care of the traitors and punish them mercilessly for being traitors.
Yeah. And Yurton went, all right, I got it. Because fun side story, because, of course, Ferrograd wasn't just a hive. It was a, of course, top secret, ADMEC facility, which is never good. Never, ever good. Ever. And this next bit, by the way, it didn't occur to me how stupid it was until I was doing this research, but we're going to deal with it. Yurton was befriending the Archmagos, who was assigned to the planet, which is weird, but I'll go with it. And the Archmagos also has a problem. Underneath Ferrograd is this ADMEC facility that he cannot let fall to non, you know, actually, really, I was going to say he can't let fall to the traitors. He can't vote non-ADMEC.
Yeah, I mean, let's just call it ADMEC.
Yeah, ADMEC only. And so he goes to Yurt and is like, hey, I'll help you kind of deal with this thing. And then what's weird about it is the facility's full of ballistic thermonuclear missiles.
ICBMs.
Why?
Well, the best part is the whole reason.
Because why?
When you have this, one, it makes no sense. But also, for them to be a threat to put down the populace or to not be rebellion, you would have to know that you had these. But they're secret ICBMs. But
that's all. These ICBMs, they have a bunch of intercontinental ballistic missiles on a planet where every continent belongs to one group.
Yeah.
This makes no sense. Like, that's not how the Imperium wages war. And yeah, I can make the comment about Dimitri. The whole point, I mean, Brad, the point of a doomsday device is lost if you keep it a secret. Great movie, by the way. Incredible film. It was a national treasure. But this whole thing makes no sense, but we'll move on to his next bit's kind of funny. The rebels look at Yurtin and go, yeah, we're taking that hive. And so they begin moving to conquer it because they have all of the advantages.
And now is where you put the beam out. And I took offense to that.
Yeah. And it is epically funny. So what happens is they're all circling in on the hive. And then there's this one holiday. And apparently you get one holiday in the Imperium, which doesn't surprise me. There's only one. And it's called the Emperor's Ascension. Well, I guess they
of the Emperor's Ascension.
Yeah. Where they eat corpse starch, turkey, ham, and I guess Wellingtons probably. They
always have to be corpse starch.
It's always corpse starch. And it's the day that they celebrate Horus slaying the Emperor and Emperor going into the throne. That's what the day is. Well, you didn't slay the emperor, almost slay the emperor. And Yurtin decides fireworks. We should have fireworks.
I do like the fact that he fired Ollie. He did the Gary Oldman with everybody. Yeah. And then just pushed the red button that fired missiles haphazardly everywhere on the planet.
Well, yeah. Oh, I should have mentioned, guys, all of this comes from Imperial Armor Book 5, I want to go with. I think it's book 5 called Siege of Rax, which you can look up that way. You can download these, by the way. Arr, it's really easy to find them. But yeah, in the book, it actually calls out that they just saw the missiles launch and they weren't coming towards them. So the rebels were like, that's not ideal. Missiles just all went straight up and went, oh, shit. And they just begin detonating in the upper atmosphere one after another. And within moments, the entire planet is engulfed in nuclear fire. Billions die instantly. And that's just the start of the bad day. The atmosphere collapses almost right after. The entire planet goes from prosperous hive world to nuclear wasteland in an instant. And evens the odds because Yurtin and the rebels knew what they were going to do. And they've been digging the whole way down, sealing their hive, going, all right, right now we're outnumbered. What if we're not outnumbered?
Yeah. What if we're not outnumbered? And then we'll just, what are we going to do once we make our entire world a nuclear wasteland? Put on our gas mask and dig a trench. Because that's what happened for 500 years.
Well, you're missing one of the best parts of this. One of the best parts of this is what happens on Terra. This whole thing blows up and Terra's watching. And back on Terra, because they were trying to figure out, do we have to exterminate this planet? What do we do? And they just see this planet just get engulfed in nuclear fire and go, oh, okay, cool, problem solved. And they literally checked Krieg off the list of problems and went, all right, that's over there now. But yeah, Yurtin decided we are taking this planet back no matter what. And so what I love about this.
I still just love this because he's still on, hey, man, you just wrecked the planet. You're like, yeah. But we're still going to declare victory soon by grinding the opponents out. Yeah, why? This
is awesome. So Krieg now becomes the death core of Krieg. The planet is plunged into nuclear winter. All life is extinguished. There is not a blade of grass on it. So the entire wasteland is just toxic clouds. This is meant to resemble Eeps. So that's just what it's meant. That's you predict. It's actually a proper way to pronounce that. But anyway, Yurtin and his loyalists decide we're taking this thing back piece by piece. And they start to emerge from Ferrograd. But they're prepared. They're going to, mile by mile, take this thing back. They've got the rebreather masks that we think of Krieg with today, long coats, and shovels, because there's no cover anywhere. So they have to make it. And
this trench warfare is so insane.
Well, it's also because the hives were blown up, so they don't have manufacturing. They can't make armor. There's no access to Bane Blades. There's no access to Lehman Russes, even Chimeras. This is going to be done piece by piece. They have some siege artillery. That's all they're able to make.
It's going to be infantry fighting. By the way, and a bunch of hand-to-hand fighting, which is just so ludicrous.
Yeah. But they had an advantage. Somewhere inside Ferrograd, and this may have been why the ADMEC facility is there, is something called the Vitae Womb. And so we should talk about this for a little bit. Along with the thermonuclear weapons was this. Now,
you mean their cloning facility?
Well, we don't know. That's the whole point. Nothing's written about it.
If you have a life womb, it's a cloning facility. That's my thing.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. And there are numerous codexes on these. Well, codexes, like Imperial Armors of them. The Vitae womb is mentioned numerous times. It's intentionally written to not be clear as to what it is. It is, what we know is that there's a top secret facility within Ferrograd, and it was not built there. It was not built there for shits and giggles. It's likely that the Krieg, like many Imperial worlds, was a golden age of technology world that the Mechanicum discovered and went, ooh, cool things. And they've been excavating. We know the Leagues of Votan, for example, during the golden age of technology, used cloning. So it's possible it's some sort of cloning. But what this means is that the Krieg have a hell of a thing going for them. They have unlimited people.
I love this. They have unlimited people with very limited gear, but
yeah,
just keep recycling those shovels and gas masks.
Yeah. 516 years this war wages for tunnels, trenches. There's sapping. There's everything. Millions die. Untold millions die.
Well, let's go back just a little bit because of the fact that the Kriegsmen during this, all the people they're creating and stuff, they get super fervored towards atoning for the rest of the world falling, not, you know, leaving the glow of the Emperor. And everybody becomes super hardcore about their loyalty to the Emperor and their willingness. This is where we get this whole willingness to die for the light of the Emperor to atone for what happened on Krieg. And they're super crazy about it. I mean, super crazy about it.
When they rejoin the Emperor, the Imperium, they had some opinions. But I want to take a moment and talk about this Vitae womb, though, a bit more, because this is actually becomes a really big deal. Once they rejoin the Imperium, this becomes kind of their defining piece to what they're going to do. So it's not that well described in Krieg lore, but if you go into Reddit, you go into any forum on Krieg, it's one of the more talked about elements of it. So I wanted to bring it up here to make sure people who are not really that into Krieg know about it. There's no real clarity into what this thing does. All we know is it aids the birth rate of Krieg, and it's viewed as an abomination by the biologists. In fact, the technology is well known. The Krieg are the only ones who are allowed to use it. And for reasons we'll kind of get into later, and it's quite helpful for them and then for the Imperium. But what's it do? And for a long time, most people thought it was just a cloning operation. In fact, there was actually a big period of time where people assumed every Kriegsman, because they didn't take their masks off for a lot of it, was a clone of Yurtin himself. This is not the case, though, because now in the lore, we have Krieg taking their helmets off. Also, some Krieg are male, some Krieg are female. They have different hair color, facial features. So it's kind of a clone.
They've got like four people they're cloning him off of. That's what I
thought. But there's been stories of pregnant Krieg being seen.
Yeah, but a clone doesn't mean you're sterile. It just means you're a clone.
Yeah, that's true. But it's the I don't know what book this is into, although this is a little fun side note. Was speaking with Archimagos Giel on his deathbed. And it's a cool story about, this is about the Vitae womb, where he's speaking to him. And in the book, he just mumbles a last little thing about the Vitae womb, but you don't know what he says. And then Archimagos Giel comes out and tells everyone, oh yeah, Yurton said to keep doing that because it's good for the Krieg. Yeah. And you can't tell, like, is that what he said? Or are you just an Archimagos, which we don't really trust you? So it's also possible that Yurton was like, no, screw that thing.
It's also that possible that horrifying. He was like, bacon cheeseburgers are delicious.
yeah.
No one knows.
But one of the, I think most of the fan theories revolve around the Vitae womb being some sort of IVF supercomputer where it's not cloning, it's just really improving the efficiency. Which I think sounds really good at first, but I'm pretty sure.
Who's carrying the babies?
Any female listener is going to side with me on like, this sounds horrifying because you're basically turning all the women into like incubators just for life, which is gross. So my theory is I think it's ectogenesis, which is like just a giant complex, like what you have in the Matrix, where eggs are fertilized and then they gestate actually to full term. So when they're birthed, they're actually, this is actually what the Mechanicum does, by the way. That's why I think this is what they do, where they come out at like 20, well, not 20 years old. We know there's some other rumors about Krieg being like preteen when they go to war.
Nothing but that's not important.
Yeah, a lot actually. But anyway.
Oh, my bad. I meant to say everything's wrong.
A lot wrong with that actually. And so the Vitae womb is pumping out people who are, they're not, you know, gestating for 9 months. They're gestating for like, you know, 14 years or whatever. Or maybe they can accelerate it, but whatever it is.
They're also,
and then like, while they're in there.
But they're pumping they're pumping knowledge into them at the same
time. Exactly.
And propaganda and everything else.
Exactly. So they're coming out like, you know, well, I'd say fully prepped for war, fully prepped for Krieg war.
Here's a shovel.
Yeah. And the reason all of this matters is because of what Brian was talking about, what the Krieg are like when they come out. So the Krieg win this war.
They're zealots immediately upon popping out. So they're doing something where it's just propaganda the entire time they're in. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And so the Krieg come out of this. They send a message to the Imperium like, hey, guys, good news. We won. And the Imperium just says, all right, we're on our way. And the Imperium gets there and it's like, hey, like 500 years ago, you guys had a regiment for us. So we're here for that regiment. And Krieg went, cool, that's over there. And then there's 19 more next to it. And the military Ordos went, oh. So this is a one-time thing? That's pretty impressive. Thanks, guys. And Krieg went, no, we're going to keep doing this. And the Krieg raise 10 regiments a year for the Imperium.
It's so bananas.
Which is why they're allowed to keep that Vitae womb, by the way. That's the Magus Biologists were like, no, this thing's an abomination. The Imperium were like, shut up.
Yeah. Well, my favorite
you shut your mouth.
Is they just don't ask. They're like, hey, we've got all these guys ready for you on your irradiated wasteland of a world. Whatever. We'll have more for you.
No. They know. They fully know about the Vitae womb.
No, they don't.
And it's in there. They know about it and it's been approved. That's the thing. It was actually approved.
I thought that was just one of those don't ask, don't tell things on that.
No, it's approved. Yeah, no, Vitae womb is an approved. Only the Krieg are approved to have it because it is written as an abomination by the Magus Biologists. And everyone, right. They're like,
I thought that they were
otherwise. Otherwise, everyone would have it. I mean, they'd be like, we could just, because the truth is, like, if you let everyone have it, like, so we can just go win all of the wars now. Like, we're just going to have a quadrillion regiments and just everywhere. And it's no, this thing's horrifying. It's an abomination of everything we care about. But it makes really good Krieg.
I was just saying, it makes really loyal guys, so.
Yeah, and the Krieg are nuts, man. And, like, the Krieg are, because Brad said it really well earlier, these guys want to redeem a planet. They're not just there to show, because when you think about Cadians, Catachans, even a lot of like, Space Marines, a lot of them are trying to redeem themselves, redeem their families. You know, like the Dark Angels are a good example of this. They're trying to show, like, no, I am Black the Temple. Bravest. I am the this. Oh, yeah, Black Templars are a great one. Krieger, different. Krieger, like, no, our planet is a complete and total shame. I am here to prove that my planet is more loyal to the Emperor than any planet that's ever existed. And I will do that by just never wavering in my loyalty or my love for the Emperor.
For a second. And also snuffing out anyone else that they think has wavering loyalty to the Emperor.
Yes. And so let's talk about how different they are. Because when we talked about the regiments,
we'll be right back after a quick break.
One negative to 40K is how much online shopping I need to do at random websites all over the place. I have like 20 logins spread across websites I have to go to all the time to grab this thing or that thing. But thanks to Shopify, that's getting a lot better. Whenever I see that nice purple button, it's great. I know I can just click and go. No making more passwords, no adding addresses, just buy the thing I want and move on with my day. So if you're thinking about starting your own business, start looking at Shopify. You can get started with your own design studio with hundreds of ready-to-use templates. Shopify can help you build beautiful online stores that match your brand style. You can also get the word out like you have a marketing team behind you to easily create email and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. What if people haven't heard about your brand? Well, Shopify can help you find your customers with easy-to-run email and social media campaigns. Or if you just get stuck, Shopify is always around to share advice with their award-winning 24/7 customer support. You can tackle all these important tasks in one place, from inventory to payments to analytics and more. No need to use multiple websites trying to figure out what platform is hosting this tool or that tool. Everything's in one place, making your life easier and your business run smoother. And like I was talking about earlier, that iconic purple Shop Pay button that's used by millions of businesses around the world. It's why Shopify has the best converting checkout on the planet. Start your business today with the industry's best business partner, Shopify,
and start hearing. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/lore. Go to shopify.com/lore. That's shopify.com/lore.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Financial stress affects far more than our bank accounts. It can take a serious toll on mental health and relationships. With 88% of Americans feeling some sort of financial stress at the start of 2026, money worries often bring anxiety, sleep disruption, and even depression. And they're one of the leading sources of conflict for couples. This month, we want to normalize the emotional weight of financial stress and remind people that struggling with money doesn't mean that they've failed. Sometimes, it's just about accessing the right kind of support. I know for me, I've had a few points in my life where I got overly worked up about a job or bills or the like. That stress led to more anxiety as it created other challenges in my life that I tried to deal with poorly. Therapy is a great way to build better coping strategies and feel less alone with all forms of stress and anxiety, be they financial or other. With BetterHelp, you can be matched with quality therapists with care and reliability. BetterHelp does the initial matching for you, helping you find the right therapist for your needs, while at the same time providing flexibility to change amongst their over 30,000 therapists at any time. BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, having served over 6 million people globally.
So when life feels overwhelming, therapy can help. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.
All the regiments are different, and some are more different than others. Like Cadians, Kadishans.
This is my favorite part about your notes.
The Tokyo Drift dudes, whatever. I forget which ones they are. Who are the dudes that can like drive a Lehman Russ sideways? Is it the desert dudes?
I know, but I'm not even helping you on this. I have no idea. Tokyo Drift dudes.
That's what
also,
they do.
Because yeah, that they also come from their underground.
Tokyo, yeah, they're also an underground ones because their planet's too irradiated or too deserty. It was one of those.
No, it's radiated.
All those guys.
They have to wash off the stuff before you can go back inside.
Fair enough. But those guys are all, they do have differences. And I'll be candid, the Kree kind of check in with them. But then you have a lot of other ones that are just kind of, oh, it's a regiment. Like the lot of ones in the books are like, so they're just a regiment of guard. But where the Kree are is they're the siege regiment, not like the Iron Warriors, where because the Iron Warriors, well, they're a siege regiment, but their siege warfare is we're going to find a weakness and we're going to exploit it. And then we're going to bust through the gap and then we're going to kill everybody. Now, the Krieg will just sit there and we're just going to fire artillery at you and just keep throwing troops at you until it's over.
Just
and forever. Oh, God, this I will say doing the research for this, reading this Imperial Armor Compendium made me so angry at all the models I've lost. The Gorgon troop transport, that thing was awesome. The Gorgon troop transport, for those who don't know what it is, looks like a beach landing craft with wheels that would drive across the battlefield and just dislodge a ton of troops. The quad launcher, which was just that was not fun during the days of templates. Earthshaker, which I still have two of because I've refused to get rid of them despite them with, you know, the legends. Heavy mortar, that was popular. All these went to legends, all of them. But anyway, Krieg's goal, hammer the enemy with artillery.
Sorry, and I'm still, give me a second. I just, all I'm thinking is like Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. Yeah. All I can imagine, I want someone to make an army of Talarans with all of their tanks with neon lights underneath them and just super
glowy. Oh, just exhibited, like rides pimped. Like, yes, a bunch of pimp ride
that,
pimped.
That refuses Russes. To leave my head now. I'm just like,
oh, God.
Talarans just come out of their caves with an army with just all glowing, hot pink, just neon lights going off. Yeah, I need this to happen.
That would work. Yeah, but the whole purpose of the Krieg is, and this is how they tried letting him play this in 10th, and then they had to change the rule because people got upset about their army rule. Like, originally it was an unlimited rule where I could hammer you into place and you couldn't move. And then
which
competitive players got upset.
Right.
But anyway.
It sucks, but like, per the what they have, their whole thing is they'll just send bodies at you forever because everyone is not only willing but wants to die for the Emperor to show you how much they love the Emperor.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about the Krieg is the way they do it is they'll just fire artillery at you, keep you in place, and then while that's going, the infantry just walk up. And then, by the way, sometimes the infantry get hit by the artillery, so be it. And then the artillery stops and the infantry just charge into you. It's great. Very effective. And let's talk about the Krieg themselves. So at their lowest level is the Krieg's guardsmen, raised at birth to just die for the Emperor. That's what they do. They do not care, but not in like a weird berserker sense, in just a, oh yeah, I'm going to die on the battlefield sense. Like, that's going to happen. That day might be today.
Weirdly,
it might not.
Everybody has the whole, we're going to do this is, what's
they're not looking to die. They just are like, yeah, okay, it's okay. That's just part of what this is. I'm going, we're here.
But that's what
there's bullets everywhere, artillery's falling.
From day zero, are told that your whole job is, your purpose in life is to die for the Emperor, period.
Yeah. Now, some of those ones who survive that will get promoted into being a grenadier. And this is the special forces of the Krieg. Which in most other regiments become scions, but these are different. These are, or these guys are probably closer to Kasserkins than anything else.
These are basically Kasserkins on this.
Yeah.
But a little bit different. Krieg Grenadiers, they get a more powerful las gun called a hell gun, but more importantly, they carry grenades. Big surprise, huh? Anti-personnel and anti-tank. And they have a bit more armor than regular guardsmen, not much. But the main piece about them is that they don't aerial drop. All scions have aerial drop. Kasserkins don't, but whatever. So they're not the airborne rangers that most Imperial Guard special forces are. Instead, they actually walk on foot with everybody else. They'll actually deploy with the other Kriegsmen and sneak up to enemy lines. And then they just use their weapons, their grenades, to blow up the enemy. Now, a fun quirk on the Krieg, though, that I like a lot, is they have no nobility class, which is obvious because they're all clones or whatever clones.
Well, let's talk about, pause on this. There's a reason they don't have a nobility. When your original leaders were put down with an edict of obliteration, which means that no record of them will ever be written down.
Yeah, it's hard to have. The lineage lines kind of got ceased about 500 something years ago, didn't they?
Yeah.
Not a lot of.
Again, an edict of obliteration is just a cool term, also. They're like, no. Like, we not only do we kill you, we want to make sure that you are just erased from all known history. Period.
But, so what I love about this is that in the Imperium, all of the officers come from nobility. The Krieg don't have that. So the Krieg, their officer class is a meritocracy. So every Krieg officer got there from being a good soldier, which is really great for the Krieg and a huge pain in the ass for all the non-Krieg. And I love this so much. And this is written in the Codex, by the way. When a battle is progressing, if leaders die, the leadership will pass to the next highest in command. So in a situation where multiple regiments are fighting near each other in an engagement together, if the commander dies of a regiment, they can fall under the command of the next regiment over, meaning a Krieg commander could take charge of non-Krieg.
Which,
here's the problem with that.
Yeah, let's talk about some real, let's stage it first, because first off, the Krieg officers basically think that commissars are too soft, and these
we're gonna get to Krieg commissars in a minute, by the way, which are hilariously enjoyable.
Yeah,
but let's just say the Krieg officers' viewpoint on the life of a Krieg is not different than their viewpoint of a non-Krieg. You're there to jam the wood chipper.
It's worked before. It'll work again.
And the non-Krieg regiments don't really seem to be able to grasp this strategic value of jamming the wood chipper. And quite often, they have little mutinies, which then lead to little civil wars when the non-Krieg regiment kills the Krieg officer, and then the Krieg kill that regiment for killing their officer.
Let's back that up, because this has to be one of the things that's bred into you when you're being raised from your pod or whatever the hell you're being raised
from.
Because Kriegsmen apparently are always ready for someone that's not a Krieg or Krieg to revolt, because those guys turn with a quickness.
They're just monsters too, by the way. It's like someone like
instantly everybody at once turns and shoots all the rest of the guys when they think they're gonna.
But this comes up a lot, by the way. It's not, it's in the Codex, but it's also in a bunch of stories where this will happen, where a Krieg officer is like, "Yeah, go over the top," and a bunch of guys are like, "No, it's all orcs over there. Why would you do that?" They're like, "No, I said go over the top," and then they don't, or they shoot the officer, and all the Krieg just execute them in the trench. And then go over the top to fight the orcs. It's like a part of their day.
It is even like the full thing. There's stories where they just say the other forces hesitated. And they were like,
yes, that's
about enough for me.
Yeah, you guys are cowards. But the wildest one to me, well, no, the commissars are the wildest, but the next wildest one to me are the medics, or kind of, sort of, whatever we want to call them. Their actual term is quartermasters, and these dudes are dark. Like super dark, but in a good way, but it's also a terrible way. So the Krieg fight in nightmarish hell zones. They are not deployed to this world's a garden world, let's preserve it. No, the Krieg only go to toxic worlds. That's all that they go to. And so as a result, they recognize that they don't really have the time or the capacity to care for the severely wounded.
Well, also, they come from a place, 500 years of war, where they had very limited ammunition, equipment, everything else. Lives, expendable. Get out of here.
But what they also recognize, which I like about this, is that they also recognize that injuries are much more significant in the areas that they're fighting. They view the soldiery, to Brad's point, as a commodity, as ammunition. So the quartermaster are these incredibly well-trained medical professionals, and they're skilled at identifying all manner of wounds and conditions on the battlefront. But they're also priests of sorts, which is Whew, it's about to get dark. So what the quartermasters do is they wander around the battlefield, checking on the wounded and dying, also collecting and marking the location of supplies so the Kryg don't run low. But what they do is they'll come up on the endless amount of wounded and make a quick assessment of them. And basically, can this person be healed and brought back to fighting? If so, they give them aid right then and there, or even transport them back to be rearmed and sent back. If not, they give them their last rites and execute them on the spot. And this sounds, it sounds messed up, but it actually is a really great concept, because if you think about it, these guys are fighting in an extremely toxic and bad area. You can't save them. What if you're fighting somewhere where there's Nurgle everywhere, right? That infection is just going to take you. Why this person is going to actually probably give their soul to Nurgle. Luckily, the quartermaster comes along and just executes you. You are never going to heal from this wound, ever.
It just cracks me up because I think about the Family Guy with the horse with the wrapping around him. Oh, it's feeling pretty good, boss. I'm going to put a lot of weight on it. I'm good.
Now, I will also mention said quartermasters also will come across non-Kryg.
Yeah.
Who may not understand what the quartermaster, because the quartermaster does have, I mean, any of you who've built Kryg know, there's a Kryg medic. So yeah, the quartermaster carries the bag with the red cross on it. I've got a bunch of them in my closet over there.
I love when the non-Krieger waving this guy down going, I've got a pretty substantial wound.
I'm not sure if I'm going to make it. Can you help me? In the Emperor's name. Oh, God damn it. Bang.
Oh, come on.
Right. Yeah. But let's get to everyone's favorite, Kryg Commissars.
Jesus.
Now, Kryg Commissars, first off, are not Kriegsmen. That is the most important thing. A Commissar is assigned to the Kryg. And the Commissar is traditionally there to prevent a loss of morale within the Imperial Guard, spurring troops on, encouraging them with the word of the Emperor, fighting against cowardice and fear by kind of giving them reminding them of the ever-glowing light of the Emperor. And if that doesn't work, shooting them quickly. The Kryg, though, they're on the other side of that spectrum. They're not really needing a lot of encouragement about, like, the Emperor.
Exactly the opposite, actually, but yeah.
Yeah, and calling a Kryg brave and zealous is like, calling the ocean wet. And I realize I'm going to get some pedantic responses and discord about, well, actually, the ocean isn't wet. It's when you get in the ocean, you get wet. Fine. Go ahead. Bring it on. I'm waiting for the comments.
You have your attacks, preemptory attacks on people saying,
I know it's coming. I know what's coming when I say the ocean is wet. People are like, actually, John, and it's fine. I'm ready for it.
Now, I love that. This is the one thing that I really like about the Kryg is the fact that nowhere else do you have where they think the Commissar's a bit too laid back. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ramp this up, bro. What is your problem?
The Commissar's number one job with the Kryg is to rein in their zealotry. Yes. Either their desire to murder the regiment next to them for not being excited enough, or the most common one, when the Kryg need to stand still while the enemy's coming in on them. So you can imagine, like, the Kryg have to do a feigned retreat, not something they're big fans of. Or you need to hide in cover while the enemy's just slaughtering and getting really close and exposing its flank to you. You have to stay still. Or maybe there's a swarm lord there and all you have is a shovel. I need you not to run out there with said shovel and hit the swarm lord. So there are stories of commissars executing Kriegsmen who are soloing it up over the top because they have to do it. But the better part of the Kryg is what I like, which is the better part of the commissars that I like is the commissars are the ones who have to go deal with the other regiments on behalf of the Kryg, because they've learned, as Brad mentioned earlier, you can't send the Kryg to do this. If there's a tiff between the two of them, if you send the Kryg over there, there's going to be a war.
I have to think to myself that the guy shows up and starts everything with a huge sigh. All right, guys. Let's start this off. I'm sorry. And okay, let's just talk about what's going on.
And this is a classic thing. If anyone who's read the Gaunt's Ghost books knows that it's pretty routine for regiments to have issues with each other. They will actually try to kill each other pretty routinely, but it's on small scale. The problem was with the Krieg, it can get pretty large scale. The Krieg will just... Yeah, and they will...
They're just a tinder. They're ready to go.
And the Commissar's job is to deal with this or to lead them in the revenge assault. And so it's basically... The way I view a lot of these stories is the Krieg have an issue with a bunch of regiments. The Commissars go over and the Krieg all just stand there waiting for them to come back with a, yeah, go kill them, or, all right, guys.
Yeah, but...
Not this, today.
So, said a lot of things I like about the Krieg. One of the things that's bad about the Krieg is this is mostly their fault because they
around
talking a mountain of shit to everybody,
but not no basically. they are Drax the Destroyer from freaking whatever whatever that movie is, Guardians of the Galaxy. They just don't realize what they're saying. They'll be sitting there next to some regiment, like, yeah, we barely got out of there with our lives, and the Krieg are like, why are you cowards? That's a normal response from the Krieg, and so they just piss everyone off all the time. Yeah, and the Departamento Minotaurum love the Krieg, and they were like, well, we got to put them out there all the time, but every time we put them anywhere, they tend to kill everybody. So these poor commissars just spend all of their time smoothing this stuff over because, yeah, the Krieg are, like, they're dicks, but they're not dicks. They're just uncomfortable to be around.
Could you just give the Wreck-It Ralph, you're a bad guy, but you're not.
But not a bad guy. Yeah. My favorite part is once a commissar is served with the Krieg enough, they usually get sent to some other like place because they've basically proven themselves to be like the greatest diplomat. Like, all right, now you're going to go over this. They just go all highly politically sensitive areas because you can do anything if you can manage the Krieg. But we're getting near the end of the cast. Let's do the part that all of you care about. All right. October 25th, 1854, the Battle of Balaclava is taking part in the Crimean War. The English and the French are at war with Russia over who cares why.
Bother to say baklava. Come on. Also baklava.
It's pronounced balaclava. That's mostly the reason. And a balaclava is a thing that you can own, but the police get really upset if you wear them in public, so you can't own them. Anyway, I can talk a bunch of reasons as to causes of this war. It was mostly stupid, but due to a massive miscommunication, how do I say this better? Artillery existed at this point in 1854. So did the firearm, most importantly, grape shot and canister shot. Lord Cardigan, yeah, these are some great names, by the way, Balaclava and Cardigan, were just rocking out. And 600 of his mounted dragoons decided to charge the Russian lines. Every single one of them died, to a man. That was 1854. That was before the invention of the cartridge, before gas and spring-driven firearms, before rockets. Laser targeting, I can keep going. Now, 38,000 years in the future, we have Volkite, bolters, I can keep going, just letting you know. So, horses. Death Corps of Krieg are known for their Death Rider mounts, the legendary Krieg steed.
Oh, also, remember, there are robot, like full mechanical steeds at this point in time.
Equally stupid.
I know. And I'm going to decided to not have those.
I am going to read this. I copied it verbatim out of the codex so I could read it to you all now. This sucks. The Death Rider mount is a highly adapted form of the original Terran horse. Why? Okay. This animal,
legendary Krieg stallions.
This animal is now the product of extreme genetic engineering, tailored for strength, endurance, and aggression, with numerous additional biosculpted organs that allow them to survive on the most polluted and toxic battlefields unscathed. You know what else can do that? A chimera. That groan.
Probably spit acid, though.
Yeah, that groan on Krieg under the auspices of the Adeptus Mechanicus, the animals are further augmented with subdermal organic armor, osmotic lungs, and fully integrated drug injection system rigged with a potent mixture of stimulants, pain blockers, and palliatives. You know what a Lehman Russ doesn't have inside of it? Pain blockers. Doesn't come up. The end result is the Krieg steed is capable of incredible levels of endurance and environmental tolerance. Tolerance. Environmental tolerance. The Krieg steed is also a weapon in its own right, with its chemically enhanced aggression centers triggered at the writer's command, and virtually impossible to incapacitate short of massive bodily trauma.
You know what? I'm stopping you here, John, because I think you were grown in a vat of Haterade, because you got to love this stuff and embrace the crazy guys riding psycho horses into battle.
We had what? Horses in World War I, Brad. And you know what else we got in, later in part of World War I?
Tanks.
Tanks. Guess which one was more effective? I just want to point out, I looked this up. Land speeders move at 350 kilometers an hour and have armor on them and don't poop. Just throwing it out there. They also have guns on them. There's just a thousand reasons why these things are light years pointless and stupid. They're slow. You're completely exposed when you're
flavor when you're of Haterade do you drink?
And I understand it's a cool model, but like honestly, guys, Mel Gibson killed horses in two different movies: Braveheart, which is an overrated but okay movie, and The Patriot, which is a colossal piece of shit. No, Braveheart's good. It's just it's fine, but The Patriot is hot garbage. Both times, he killed the horse with a stick. One of them was the American flag. Holy God, that movie's bad, by the way. Oh, my God. The Patriot's terrible. But horses, no.
They have so many of them, too. If you're running, you've got multiple units of
horses. I don't own a single one. And don't get me wrong. They actually, the aesthetics on them, they look great. The modeling GW did in making them, they look great. And they look great ever since even the resin nightmares of them. They look good. The rules are actually good. I just cannot get over. It's a horse on a battlefield. And by the way, the Krieg only deploy to battlefields with no cover. How do you get a horse out of a trench?
You jump over it, bro.
So they have to run from you're going to see this thing coming. I'm just saying, charge of the Light Brigade. You can look it up. It didn't go well. It really didn't go well.
Yeah, and that was 1854. Modified horses, it could have been better.
It would have gone equally bad. Running into grape shot is not ideal.
So now just charge the cannons is all I'm saying.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't charge the cannons. You coach people on how to keep their
flank
tanks.
Maneuvers.
Yeah, on how to keep their tanks hidden from las cannons. Horsey. It's a horse.
Black Stallion would wreck this.
Anyway.
Silver? I'm trying to think of famous horses. Seabiscuit.
Seabiscuit. I don't. I mean, there's a bunch of. What's the movie where the horse dies in the mud? I've never seen that, but I know it traumatized your generation.
Oh, that was a good one.
Whatever it is.
But the famous Mr. Ed?
Yeah, they used peanut butter. That movie's shit was weird. That's what it was. It was peanut butter. I put peanut butter in his gum. That's what made him do that weird thing in his face. That's all I know about famous Mr. Ed. All right, but that's enough Krieg for now, because we're going to talk a lot of Krieg. Because next week, we're going to talk about what made me actually fall in love with the Krieg originally, which is one of the greatest. I mean, God, the Imperial Armor books were just incredible. We're doing the Siege of Vrax, which spanned three Imperial Armor books. And this battle gets epic. It introduces amazing units. Almost all of them have gone to Legends by now. Whatever, they were a little bit OP. whatever. It's a really cool story because it reminds me a lot of Eisenhorn in the sense that it kind of shows how bad things just get in within the Imperium. It just gets out of hand. And what starts off a lot of times is kind of well-meaning just ends up nightmarish and exploitation, et cetera, et cetera.
As always with the Imperium.
Yeah, it's a really great story. So we're gonna begin the coverage of Siege of Vrax next week. It's going to be 1 to 3 episodes. It covers 3 books. It might be 3 episodes. It might only be 2. The first one's a lot more detailed. So yeah, and also it makes me happy because I don't have to do a Black Library because some of the Black Libraries suck. And probably even better for all of you, you can actually read this. I'm not covering a Black Library book where it's actually kind of hard to get a hold of. This one's just simple yo-ho, yo-ho. You know, you can download these ones and get it for yourself. So until then, John Barsotti, Brett Chester,
this guy,
see you guys next week.